Speechware Document 29. Teamwork in Political Reform. From an address delivered before the Harvard Union, February 23, 1907. Let each of you college men remember in afterlife that in the fundamentals he is very much like his fellows who have not been to college, and that, if he is to achieve results, instead of confining himself exclusively to disparagement of other men who have achieved them, he must manage to come to some kind of working agreement with these fellows of his. There are times, of course, when it may be the highest duty of a citizen to stand alone, or practically alone. But if this is a man's normal attitude, if normally he is unable to work in combination with a considerable body of his fellows, it is safe to set him down as unfit for useful service in a democracy. In popular government, results worth having can only be achieved by men who combine worthy ideals with practical good sense, who are resolute to accomplish good purposes, but who can accommodate themselves to the give and take necessary where work has to be done, as almost all important work has to be done, by combination. Moreover, remember that normally the prime object of political life should be to achieve results and not merely to issue manifestos, save, of course, where the issuance of such manifestos helps to achieve the results. It is a very bad thing to be morally callous, for moral callousness is disease. But inflammation of the conscience may be just as unhealthy so far as the public is concerned, and if a man's conscience is always telling him to do something foolish, he will do well to mistrust its workings. The religious man who is most useful is not he whose sole care is to save his own soul, but the man whose religion bids him strive to advance decency and clean living and to make the world a better place for his fellows to live in. And all this is just as true of the ordinary citizen in the performance of the ordinary duties of political life. Point. So it is with the great questions which group themselves round the control of corporations in the interest of the public. There has been a curious revival of the doctrine of state rights in connection with these questions, by the people who know that the states cannot with justice to both sides practically control the corporations, and who therefore advocate such control, because they do not venture to express their real wish, which is that there shall be no control at all. Honest and fair-dealing railway corporations will gain and not lose by adequate federal control. Most emphatically, it is both the duty and the interest of our people to deal fairly with such corporations, and to see that a premium is put upon the honest management of them, and that those who invest in them are amply protected. But those who invoke the doctrine of state rights to protect state corporate creations in predatory activities extended through other states are as short-sighted as those who once invoked the same doctrine to protect the special slave-holding interest. The states have shown that they have not the ability to curb the power of syndicated wealth, and, therefore, in the interest of the people, it must be done by national action. Our present warfare is against special privilege. The men, many of them, I am sorry to say, college men, who are prompt to speak against every practical means which can be devised for achieving the object we have in view, the proper and adequate supervision by the federal government of the great corporations doing an interstate business, are, nevertheless, themselves powerless to so much as outline any plan of constructive statesmanship which shall give relief. I have watched for 6 years these men, both those in public and those in private life, and though they are prompt to criticize every affirmative step taken, I have yet to see one of them lift a finger to remedy the wrongs that exist. So it is in every field of public activity. States' rights should be preserved when they mean the people's rights, but not when they mean the people's wrongs, not, for instance, when they are invoked to prevent the abolition of child labor, or to break the force of the laws which prohibit the importation of contract labor to this country, in short, not when they stand for wrong or oppression of any kind, or for national weakness or impotence at home or abroad. It is to the men who work in practical fashion with their fellows, and not to those who, whether because they are impractical or incapable, cannot thus work, that we owe what success we have had in dealing with every problem which we have either solved or started in the path of solution during the last decade.